Carol Leifer is a stand-up comedian, actress, and animal charity activist, and she's written for shows like Seinfeld, Saturday Night Live, and Modern Family, as well as for several Academy Award ceremonies. Her new book, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Crying, gives practical advice from how to dress to how to be a good boss, and of course she includes great personal stories from her life in show business. It's published by Quirk Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Carol Leifer to our show today. Hello.
Thank you.
Many people get nervous when they have to speak in front of a group of people, but you write that doing stand-up refreshes you when you've had a bad day.
Yes. Well, that is unusual and very specific to the breed that is a stand-up comedian, because I say in my book that, you know, most people's greatest fear is speaking in front of large groups of people, but most comedians' greatest fear is not speaking in front of large groups
because
of people.
Because you feed off of the audience?
Absolutely. You know, there's something I always tell somebody who wants to attempt going into stand-up comedy. You have to love being on stage and loving that feeling to want to pursue it, because it's not in most people's wheelhouse.
So you prefer to acting, which is also about being in front of a lot of people?
Yeah. You know, well, I know you said in my intro that I'm an actress, and had I seen that before, I would have edited that out, because I'm not, you know, I don't
well,
really
you've done
act
other people's lines in comedy
yeah,
situations.
But really not a lot.
You wrote all of your own lines in various things that you've done?
That's true, yeah. But it's so funny. I still don't think of stand-ups, you know, as we're actors per se. We're used to being ourselves, so that's, you know, easy.
Well, it's. I was talking earlier with Bob Saget about different approaches to comedy. George Carlin wrote out every joke. He wrote out the ums and the hums, whereas somebody like Lenny Bruce, no two nights were ever the same.
Right.
So there are. Now, George Carlin was really being an actor, even though he wrote all of those funny lines.
And I think, in a way, a musician, because there is a rhythm to comedy that you can never avoid. And you can, I always write my jokes down beforehand of what I want to try. But then when you get out there, you never know how it's going to come out. And I trust that process, because it will come out how it's supposed to come out.
Well, comics will tell you, or have told me, that it's very hard at the beginning, because you go out there, and even if your material is pretty good, you may not get any laughs.
Absolutely. No, it takes a long, long time to become good at stand-up comedy, and there's no way around it. You have to really suck and really be bad at it to get good.
So that's your advice for an aspiring comic? Suck and be bad at it for a while?
Well, that will come as a result, but to just go on stage a lot. I remember Stephen Wright, the great stand-up comic, who started a little before me, who said, go up for 3 years, go on stage for 3 years every night that you can, and do it, and don't judge yourself, because that's what will stop you from becoming a successful comic. Just go up on stage. And he was right.
And even if you tell a joke that you know is a great joke and you don't get a laugh, that's okay?
Well, you know, that's the thing, Leonard, though, because unfortunately, there are jokes that a comic can think are great, but if the audience doesn't respond to it, you have to throw it out.
Well, one night you get a big laugh, one night you don't. Also, it's been my experience that you could be the most brilliant young comic, but if they don't know your name, it's going to be harder for you to get laughs. And if you are famous and you're doing really mediocre material, they're going to be rolling in the aisles because they've already come expecting to have a good time.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, because I think the famous card, and I've seen it a lot with a lot of my contemporaries, in a club when they go on stage, it will give them the first minute or two. But then if they don't, you know, what I love about stand-up, there's so many things, but it is the great equalizer. And famous or not or whatever, if the jokes are not good and you're not funny, the audience will let you know that. Conversely, if you're very funny and doing great, they'll let you know that too.
Well, most stand-ups were class clowns, but that's less likely for a girl than for a boy.
Hmm.
Were you the class clown?
I was always funny growing up. I wouldn't have called myself a class clown, because being good in school was important to my family, and I knew I couldn't mess around.
You came from a family of academics.
Yes. So I knew that was important, but I was putting on shows in my basement when I was a kid and selling tickets around the neighborhood, and I was funny in camp, and I won the coveted Hammy Award, despite my Jewish status. So no one is really very surprised when they heard from growing up that I'm a comic and a
comedy. And your parents
writer.
Encourage you?
My parents did encourage me. My father was an optometrist, and his name was Seymour. Come on now, people. I know you're listening and laughing out there. But my father really had dreamed of being a comedian and encouraged, you know, I grew up in an environment that was rife with comedy albums of the time. And he would call us down when comedians were on Ed Sullivan. So, you know, I grew up in appreciation. And my father was very funny. I still have yet to meet a pro that told a joke as well as my dad did.
You studied theater in college. Can taking classes, even improv classes, make people funny? Can you learn how to be funny?
I think it is. It's a skill that can be developed. But I have found that most comedians that I know and who I came up with and who started out or that I see now are generally, it's some kind of in the DNA somewhere. It's a little hard to manufacture.
But you run up against, as a woman, you run up against some prejudices. Christopher Hitchens once said that women just can't be funny. And I don't think he was the only person who ever said that.
Yeah.
Even though we've had some, right. Lucille Ball was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Carol Burnett, way before you ever got into the business, Lily Tomlin.
I forgot. I can't curse on this station, right?
No.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say that.
Well, you can, but we'll have to dump it and the audience won't know. They'll just know that you said something.
Yeah.
This is not like Jon Stewart.
No, I was going to say Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he's passed on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, when someone says something like that, it's just a blatantly idiotic statement and aggressive and hostile, and I don't really give it a lot of thought because the person is clearly out of their mind to say something as dumb as that.
This book is as much a business book as it is a show business
book. I hope so, yes.
In the business world, you write that women actually have advantages that they don't always realize they have. What are some of those advantages?
Well, I think there are some things that I know from my personal experience I was socialized to be that I think I've turned into, you know, an advantage. I mean, separate of that, I think the tremendous advantage women have in the comedy world, in comedy writing, is to speak about our experience, because a woman's experience is different than a man. So it was doubtful that when I worked at Seinfeld that a man would have pitched, you know, Elaine thinks that the Korean manicurists are talking about her behind her back in Korean, because that happened to me. It doesn't happen to a man.
Well, how many women were on that writing team for Seinfeld? Were you the only one?
No, I was not. There was...
Because it sounded to me like a very male-oriented show.
No, there are always women on staff, and better than that, they are always Larry, David, and Jerry Seinfeld were always interested in those kind of ideas because they smartly knew that it broadened the appeal of the show and wanted writers that would bring unique and different experiences to the table.
Same thing on Saturday Night Live?
I started with one other woman the season I was there and then wound up being the only woman there. But I'm used to this, Leonard. I'm very used to being in the boys' club. I'm very comfortable in the boys' club.
Much has been made about how difficult it is for women to ask for a raise. Even female bosses can interpret that as being pushy. There's a whole pushy problem that a lot of women have to deal with.
I guess. I mean, you know, I've always thought that you, in business, you have to be assertive, you have to be confident, and you have to go after what you want. You know, to me, it's a tricky balance. You need to be the squeaky wheel, but you don't want to be the pain in the ass, you know? You have to watch that balance.
Well, the Facebook COO, Sheryl Sandberg, wrote in, she actually started a campaign to ban the word bossy.
Yeah.
She argues that the word is used in a negative way to describe young girls, whereas it's a positive attribute for boys.
Right.
But then Tina Fey used the word bossy and wound up with a best-selling book.
Yeah, that's true. Look, I applaud Sheryl Sandberg, and she's obviously a very successful woman and, you know, a very successful book. But I really feel, you know, taking your time to create these campaigns, ban bossy. How about really participating in something that affects world change, you know, like championing women's reproductive rights across the world. That really would make a big impact, as opposed to a cute little campaign to ban the word bossy that will have no impact on really anybody.
Well, what are they reproducing on Facebook? What do you think makes a good boss?
I think a good boss, and I've worked for a lot of bosses, and I've been a boss, and I try to emulate from the bosses that I've worked for, is to create an environment, especially being in the creative arts like I am in comedy writing, to create an environment where there's no fear, because I find in a comedy writing room, you want people to be able to feel free to pitch anything. And the bad bosses I've had have created an environment where you're intimidated. And it's too bad, because sometimes the idea that you're the most intimidated to pitch winds up being the best idea once you say it. But it's kind of an atmosphere of freedom and relaxation. So to me, that makes creatively a very good boss. But I also like bosses who are clear with their employees. I've always liked working for people who the direct approach, you know, I didn't like when you did that. And, you know, if that kind of thing happens again, I think this kind of thing might happen, or I would appreciate it if X or Y. I like a direct approach, and you can do it without coming off badly.
My guest is Carol Leifer, who's written a book called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Crying, Lessons from a Life in Comedy. It is published by Quirk. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we're back with Carol Leifer, who's written a book called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Crying, Lessons from a Life in Comedy. It is published by Quirk. And you worked in a lot of different shows. Didn't you work on the Larry Sanders Show?
Yes, I did.
Based on my experience, I can say that came the closest in many ways to the way a talk show really is.
Yeah.
So many people get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to do serious research to find out what really goes on?
No. You know, I think there was so much knowledge from the writers, because Gary Shandling hired a lot of stand-ups like me who had done The Tonight Show and things like that. So everybody kind of knew the ways of the talk show. It was really more, you know, about the characters and the interactions, what makes a great show, you know, really mining the depths of the people's personalities in the show and their conflicts and things that would make them interesting to the audience.
Well, part of the fun was what was going on behind the scenes and then what actually happened on the show.
Yeah.
And the contrast between the two.
Mm-hmm. And with, you know, shows like that, I always deflect to, you know, Gary Shandling was the master of that show and is involved in every aspect, and it really was his creative.
So what has he done lately?
I see him out and about. He does stand up.
So he's back to his roots.
Yeah, he is.
He is in Captain America, but that's not exactly the same thing as having your own show.
Right. Well, having your own show, as great as that is and seems to your average everyday person, you know, really takes a toll in terms of time and exhaustion. I really understand why people, celebrities, only do one or so of those things, because it's so all-consuming.
So you understand why Letterman is retiring?
Well, you know, for selfish reasons, I'm sorry that he's retiring, because I still think he's as good as his first day, and there's no interviewer who's better. But it does seem that comes a time where, you know, people hang it up, sadly.
I've been doing this for 29 years, but don't ask me to hang it up just yet.
No one is.
What made you want to write?
No one is asking for your resignation.
Getting back to the book, what made you want to write a book about business advice rather than show business advice? Because a lot of people who want to go into show business need a lot of advice. But you're writing about things like how to dress and how to do a good interview.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, in recounting my show business stories, I could see that the advice really became larger than just particularly to show business, and became about business, because I feel like I'm in a sort of unique position in that I am hired. You know, I still go up for jobs and writing jobs. And I was just hired by this show, Devious Maids, that I'm working on, Mark Cherry Show. And then I also hire people. So I've seen both sides of the coin. You know, I've seen it from a great perspective. And what I have seen a lot is that people who go up for jobs, you know, young people are very ill-equipped in terms of the workplace. So, you know, the biggest compliment I've gotten from my book is I've had friends who've read it and love the Hollywood dish of it, but they were like, you know what, I'm giving this book to my kid who's graduating college or my kid who's graduating high school because I think they'll kind of get it.
Well, in talking about going up for a job, are writers typecast? For example, if they look at your resume and they see Seinfeld, do they immediately think, well, she only can write a certain kind of show? Or, well, in your case, of course, you've been all over the place. You've done Modern Family and you did Larry Sanders. You did Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So people might understand that you have a wider range.
Right.
But still, that also means you have to convince people that you can adjust to this latest concept.
Yeah. But I think what it translates down to is when a writer goes to interview on a job, it's really more about the status of a show as opposed to whether you could manipulate that style of whatever show you're going up for. You know, I mean, the Seinfeld credit will never hurt me in any way. It's always kind of the gold standard of, you know, the odds of working on a classic show like that are infinitesimal. So that
as long as it's still in reruns, I think you have...
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think more with writers when they go up for jobs, being a performer, what I found is I have an advantage because, you know, and I talk about in my book, when you go on a job interview and you have a meeting, you have to have a certain up and positive energy that a lot of writers don't bring to the interview process. It's like, okay, maybe you can be like that in the writer's room once you get the job, but you have to kind of muster up a modicum of enthusiasm and energy to get the job.
So writers look kind of depressed when they're in the writing room?
I would say that's a fair, slightly fair assessment, possibly, yes.
And then they have to come up, well, is it a collaborative thing? I've always imagined those writing rooms where somebody says, I have a great idea for a joke and tells something, and then the next person says, actually, it could be a little funnier if we do this. And then eventually you wind up with five chefs coming up with the best stew.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens in the writer's room. It's exactly
so
the synergy.
So is it because it's competitive?
It's not.
Can you top this?
It's not competitive as much as it's an amazing synergy that happens in a writer's room. It's exactly what you said. Somebody brings up something. It's kind of like a volley. It goes back to someone else, and they hit it back here, and one more hit back, and you've gotten the best joke or whatever you're working on, the best installment of it.
Well, how does it compare to writing for a stand-up act? In the end, is a joke a joke?
Stand-up comedy is different than writing for a sitcom because, you know, jokes are jokes and you can write them out on paper and I could show you which are my top-selling jokes, you know, but as opposed to when you work on a sitcom or a dramedy, you're dealing with, it's more like playwriting, you know, which is different. I mean, there was always good jokes, hopefully, in that, but it's part of a much bigger support system.
Well, one of the real changes I've seen in stand-up over the years is it used to be that people came out and did an act, whether they did some improvisation or not. It was still an act. And now a comic is very likely to come out and say, okay, who's from Brooklyn? And then the next thing you know, there's very little prepared material that's all about the interaction with the audience.
Well, that to me is always a mark of someone who is a bit amateurish. I always know that when someone starts going to the crowd and who's from here and who's from where and where'd you go to school and, you know, who remembers you who, I mean, it's like a little more of a party trick than doing real solid jokes.
When people hear that you're a comedy writer, do they try to pitch you jokes or stories?
Yes, that has happened to me.
And have you used any of them?
I have. Along the way, you know, 99% of the ideas are terrible. And every now and then you'll get an idea that is very good.
Now, you write about simple things like saying hi to people, even people you barely know.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when you try to say hi to Harry Dean Stanton?
Well, yes, I write about this in my book because I do believe that there is a social element to job getting and job securing that's always really important to be social. I had gone to a dinner that Richard Belzer, the comedian, had put together at the Palm Restaurant in L.A., and he's very good friends with Harry Dean Stanton. He invited a bunch of comedians, one of which was me, and we had a great dinner, really fun, a lot of drinking, three-hour great dinner. And about a month later, my partner and I went to see Paul Simon perform, and my partner, Lori, turned around and said, oh, there's Harry Dean Stanton over there. Why don't you go over and say hello? And I deferred at the beginning. And she said, you know, you always tell me that even when you say no, that I should make you, because great things have come from you saying hello and being social. So I walked over, and he was sitting with Jack Nicholson. So fueled by, I believe, a margarita that I had had at the venue's bar, I went over and I said, hey, Harry Dean, how are you? Carol Lever, we had dinner about a month back at the Palm. And he just greeted me with a shrugged and with a blank stare and shook his head no. And I just, for some reason, kept going. You know, like, you had the petite filet and I had a T-boat. Nothing was breaking him. And Jack Nicholson, did not turn his head one smidgen the entire time. And so I gave up. I said, well, anyway, Harry Dean,
nice
to see you. Yeah. And then as I walked away, I remember now. He remembered a little late, but.
Carol Leifer is a four-time Emmy nominee for her writing on shows like Seinfeld, Modern Family, Saturday Night Live, The Larry Sanders Show. She's done 7 Academy Awards telecasts and starred in 5 of her own comedy specials. And now she's written a book called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Crying, Lessons from a Life in Comedy. It's published by Quirk. Thank you so much for being on our show.
My pleasure.